Welcome to Public Health Out Loud, Public Health for the Public. My name is Dr. Philip Chan from the Rhode Island Department of Health. Today we are talking about public health and all that goes with it, from major historical events to workforce shortages and implications for the future. Our guest today is Associate Dean for Public Health and Health Policy and Professor of Medicine at the Larner College School of Medicine at the University of Vermont. In 2018, she received the Vermont Public Health Association Public Health Champion Award and was recently awarded the UVM President's Distinguished University Citizenship and Service Award for her innovative teaching, creative leadership, and service to the University of Vermont community. In addition, her extensive medical and academic career, she's also an author of a recent book entitled A History of Public Health, From Past to Present. Dr. Jan Carney, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here today.
So Dr. Carney, just start off and maybe tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in public health, and this is my second career in academics, and I spent a good 14 years and three different governors and two parties in public health practice, and I love public health. It's the most exciting field related to health today, in my opinion, and I'm so glad that that was the choice that I made. I didn't discover it till after I was already a physician, and I'm an internal medicine specialist. I completed my residency. I was seeing patients, went to a conference, and went, I had no idea. There was all this science and practice of preventing disease and improving the health of entire populations. And one thing led to another. I went back to public health school, got my Master of Public Health degree, and then looked for something full-time in public health because I thought that that's the space I wanted to be in for my career.
You know, that story really resonates with me, Dr. Carney. I think similar to yourself, I'm also a late bloomer to public health. I went, did residency, did fellowship in infectious disease, got an NIH grant, was doing research, and hey, just happened to have an opportunity to join the Rhode Island Department of Health. And for the Rhode Islanders out there, many of you know my story, but the rest is history, very involved in the COVID pandemic. But one thing I'd like to tell folks is that, you know, I always loved being a doctor because it was, you know, that one-on-one sort of patient being able to help that person in front of me. But in public health, right, it's like being a doctor to the public and you can help so many more people. What was your interest in public health?
That was kind of it. I didn't really know that there was all the science and practice of medicine and healthcare. And I love talking with patients one-on-one, doing whatever I could to help them, you know, no matter what the problem was, no matter, you know, whether we're in an office or the emergency room, and extremely gratifying. And then when I went to public health school, I realized that some of the things that were really disturbing, that people dying from things like lung cancer and heart disease and diabetes and some of the conditions that I've been taking care of people, and they were so terribly sick, that we could prevent. And that there was a science of how we do that with entire populations. It was almost like you had to step back from the office and hospital and look at this other perspective that definitely complemented taking care of individual patients, but was different and had some different approaches that we could use to prevent some of the conditions that people were suffering from. So I think that was the appeal to me. And then, as you said, when I was a state's health commissioner, you felt like your responsibility was the public's doctor, and that the decisions you made with all the staff that you worked with and all the community partners that you had in healthcare and outside of healthcare, that together, the work you were doing was really, really important, and people's health and lives depended on it. So extremely appealing.
Now, you wrote a book about the history of public health. And that's obviously a very broad topic. And just as you're talking here, I'm wondering, first off, tell us a little bit about the book. And then I'm also wondering about the history of physicians in public health. You know, you look at a lot of health departments nowadays, and they're staffed mostly by non-physicians, non-clinical people. Certainly not that there's anything wrong with that. Some, you know, amazing, amazing people in public health. But just thinking about the history of clinicians and physicians in public health, how did all that begin? What is the history behind that?
There's a lot of intersection between the history of medicine and the history of public health in terms of some of the people and the stories that we hear about. But there are also some key differences. And I got interested in this is it was my third textbook that I've written. I love to teach. And when you're in public health, you teach people one at a time. You teach people in classrooms. You teach people in public settings. You do educational things through the media. And you're a teacher. So somehow the publisher that I've been working with asked if I might write a book on the history of public health, because there really hadn't been one from a public health practice perspective since the late 50s. And we know that an awful lot's happened in public health since then. So I gave it a try. And it was really hard because there is so much to choose from. And you think about, you know, what is it? What are the most important things? And what I ended up focusing on, so many of the things on the research I did were topics that you've heard about. And sometimes they're healthcare related and sometimes they're not. Some of them were, what I paid particular attention to was a couple of things. First, how I figured out, you know, what was the culture of the time? You know, when we think about history, and I'm not a historian by training, so this is something that I had to learn and learn how to do the research and think about this for public health. But when we think about history, we often think about historical events in our today's culture. And so we have to think about how do we put ourselves back in the culture and what was happening at the time. Some of the ways that I did that was to look at newspaper articles, and our university librarians taught me how to research newspapers back way, way back all over the country, sometimes in Europe, sometimes here in the US, in different locations. And you get a real sense if you think about what's in the media today, not necessarily on social media, but consider the major networks or major news organizations. Think about, you get a good sense of really what the culture is like or what are some of the important issues. So it's important to have that context. The other thing was that what resonated with me along the way was in some of these stories, they were incredibly relevant to what we're challenged by today. And people sometimes have a misperception, well, it's just history. Well, actually, there's a ton for us to learn. And sometimes we get hints as to, well, they had that same kind of problem. Maybe we should try something different with some of today's challenges. And I can give you a couple examples of some of those, because I was actually quite amazed at some of the parallels for some of the controversies that we face today.
Yeah, we'll touch on the COVID pandemic in a second here. But, you know, as you look prior to the COVID pandemic, because that's, you know, been a huge topic lately, but thinking about the last century of public health in America or beyond, you know, I'm reminded that we take a lot of things for granted, right? Antibiotics, clean water, a lot of infrastructure there. But in your mind, what are some of the biggest landmark advances in public health in our country in the last century? What do we not think about much anymore or take for granted based on your research here?
I think we're coming back to the whole environment. One of the things that happened in the last century was a whole environmental awakening. And that happened gradually over time. Everything from the jungle and food safety to motor vehicle accidents to air pollution, water, all kinds of things. And you had Rachel Carson write Silent Spring, and she ended up as published in The New Yorker. It's about DDT. She went in front of Congress. She was very, very brave and just a compelling story there. We had the Denora, Pennsylvania and London fogs from weather inversions where people died and had serious respiratory illness from smog, basically. We had polluted water. We had the mass growth of industry and not having a sense of what we had to do to protect our own environment from ourselves and our advances in industry. And even we had in Ohio, the Cuyahoga River burned, not once, but multiple times, and that was happening. So all of these things ultimately coalesced, and we had some of the environmental protections that we know of today and government agencies that go along with that. And it feels to me like we need to come back full circle on that in terms of climate change, and that being not just in our country, but a global phenomenon, weather events, all the heat-related illnesses, the human health effects, and climate and health is an absolutely compelling issue. And as I look back at history, I think, number one, it took a number of unfortunately horrible events like we're experiencing now, and brave people, people advocating for different aspects of this, being organized in terms of focusing on health, until ultimately those programs and protections and public awareness was raised to make substantive changes. So that to me is a big issue from the last century. There's lots of different ones, but that to me is a really critically important one.
Yeah, I think just as you're talking here, I'm reflecting about things like you mentioned malaria. You know, I was reflecting that the CDC right initially started to address malaria, and I was reminded too that you know malaria is making a comeback. I mean, I was just reading about some stories right in the southern U.S. about malaria. And I think related to your very valid point about climate change potentially and some of the environmental impact. And to me too, I'll just throw out a story about TB, right? So about a quarter of the world's population is infected with TB. Yet how often do we talk about TB in the United States? Rarely, because we have such good public health programs about it. Let's touch on the COVID pandemic here. I mean, this has been such an overwhelming story here in public health. If I can ask, what was your role in the COVID pandemic, both public health or clinician in Vermont? What was your role?
I was here at the university, and my role is Associate Dean for Public Health and Health Policy and a professor of medicine, and I direct all of our graduate programs in public health. And one of the things we did was we worked collaboratively with the Department of Health. We have a fabulous Department of Health here in Vermont. Healthcare leaders, community not-for-profits did all kinds of work. One of the things that we did in our program, and I personally did, was public educational role. And I did that here at the university. And we did webinars on all the topics. And as things changed, as the testing scenarios and the vaccine rollout and things that people needed to do, we supported that. And we did that with educational webinars and a lot of presentations, both inside and outside the organization. So that was I would say that's a prototype public health role.
Loved it. Well, thank you for all your work during the pandemic and, you know, a lot of positive stories coming out from Vermont during the pandemic. So good job and congratulations to you all in Vermont. So, you know, the COVID pandemic, you know, there's been pandemics, of course, of influenza throughout history. And I guess one thing I was reminded just from reading about, for example, the 1918 influenza pandemic was that there were some similarities to one of those points you made, right? About masking, et cetera. And of course, I think a lot of history has been lost about some of these earlier pandemics, right? They didn't have TikTok or, you know, Facebook during 1918. But in your mind, what are some similarities? What are some lessons learned, you know, similar to COVID to past pandemics here throughout the history of public health here?
Well, some of the pandemic, I'll come back to pandemic preparedness. I don't think we've learned that one quite yet. So that's one I think we need to keep working on.
Agree.
from the influenza pandemic, the different diseases, but some of what we learned was the same, you know, in terms of the communities. And there were some really interesting papers published actually around the time of COVID-19 pandemic about social distancing and communities that sort of canceled public events and sort of took the kind of early steps that we took here and many states took and many communities took in terms of that was better for public health. Fewer people died, as an example. We didn't really have as sophisticated surveillance systems then, but some of those principles and basic public health practice were the same. I think that we did not have, and there was a very some interesting papers published, but there were really, in terms of diversity, equity, inclusion, racial and ethnic disparities in particular, there was not good data. There was a lot of false narratives going on back in the influenza pandemic. And as we fast forward to COVID-19, we know that we saw just horrible disparities magnified during that time. We also saw the fact that we don't have everyone with basic health insurance in our country. And it was challenging for so many people, and it was even more challenging for so many others because of some of those foundational strategies that we haven't yet been successful at. So there was a couple places to start.
Yeah, I think one thing that really resonates for me is just basic healthcare access, right? So I'm reminded here in Rhode Island and lots of places, pop-up clinics, pop-up testing. It would have been nice, I think, and it would still be nice to invest in some healthcare infrastructure, right? Clinics on in every community, everyone has access. Because I think so much, and feel free to chime in here, I think so much of pandemic preparedness, right, starts just with basic healthcare access. Where do you get tested for COVID or flu? Where do you get treatment? Where do you get vaccination? And I think setting up pop-up clinics in communities is good, facilitates access, but I think having more infrastructure and more standing healthcare clinics in general would be a good way to go just for preparing us for the next pandemic.
They call it that cycle of panic and neglect and panic and neglect, you know, and once you're past something, everyone goes, phew, we got past that. So now, but in reality, we need to be thinking about that is one of the fundamental lessons of public health is you don't know what's going to happen next. So you sort of have to be thinking ahead, preparing for the worst so that you won't be in that situation. I think one of the high points of the pandemic is we learned about the value of telehealth. We're in a rural state, and that was something that both the health professionals, doctors and nurses, and patients both liked. It helped us tremendously. One of the things we are just finishing up a grant to study the factors that predicted testing, and we did a lot of focus groups and stakeholder interviews in Vermont and Maine, and looking at some of the strategies that were really positive. And here in Vermont, as I thought about this, from my history of direct public health practice with the Department of Health and my role now, thinking about those partnerships that we created when it wasn't a public health emergency, that's what made us so successful when there was one. So we should be thinking about, and Public Health 3.0 in part is about being deliberate and intentional about having partnerships all across the border. As you mentioned, it might be through EMS and different communities who are trained and prepared to do something in an emergent setting. Think about how we use pharmacies to give vaccines and in some cases do testing. So we have a range of partners we shouldn't let go of. We should think about how do we keep everyone connected and we trust one another such that, heaven forbid, we have another scenario that we all have to rally really, really fast. We're ready. And those partnerships, and it might look different in different communities, who they are and what that looks like, but I think that's an important part of it.
Dr. Carmi, let me ask you this, something that I've been struggling with myself. I think as you talk about infrastructure, I think there's a lot of us, right? A lot of us physicians, public health workers that have gained tremendous experience during the pandemic and, you know, incredible learning curves, right? For things, you know, addressing disparities, testing, vaccination, modeling, just a lot of these elements of pandemic preparedness, understanding the science of how to mitigate a lot of these pandemics. One thing, though, that we are witnessing and have witnessed and continue to observe is this pushback against public health. And I see this as one of the biggest barriers in the future to addressing pandemic. I mean, if, you know, mask mandates, just, you know, recommending masking, no one wants to have another, you know, stay at home order, things like that. So I'm just wondering, you know, this pushback against public health that we're seeing and your thoughts of how much of a barrier this is for future pandemic preparedness and how what we've experienced in COVID may affect us during future responses.
If I could do one thing and have it happen like right away, here's what it would be. Have every single person in our country feel comfortable about accessing high quality scientific and health information. Know where to get it. Have trusted sources, not rely on something in the moment that sounds too good to be true. So of course it isn't. And that ongoing health and science literacy. In medicine, I think that when patients are more empowered and partners in their healthcare, they have better health outcomes. They come with better questions. They're invested in doing whatever they need to do to take care of themselves, to manage illness or prevent illness and keep themselves and their family healthy. Likewise, in public health, when individuals and entire communities and trusted leaders in communities know about the science and practice that contributes to good health outcomes and where to find people who will give you the honest answer. And sometimes that honest answer, to me, this was a really challenging piece, is when everything is changing really fast and you don't know, you don't have all the answers. Everyone's doing research, but you don't know in the moment. And if you are able to communicate that in the right way, people will trust you even when you don't know. And you come back later and the information has changed, has been updated, and everyone follows along. All right. Those are the kinds of communication skills I think are really, really hard. Sometimes you get, now we have different venues for social media, not just town hall meetings and those kinds of things, where people are highly critical. You don't know who necessarily is, where it's coming from, but it's there. And you have to know not only how to communicate clearly and accurately and the most up-to-date science, you also have to have the confidence and resilience that this has to be sustained. And you have to bring other colleagues along, and you might have to have new partnerships that you're all giving pretty much the same message. And I think that in the places that are able to do that, your outcomes are better. And I think that as we're talking, I'm thinking about during the pandemic, if our health commissioner or head of our medical center, the dean of our medical school, professors here in our college, public health experts, everyone saying the same thing, that helps. It helps. It doesn't take care of 100% of any mistrust or skepticism about what we're saying, but it most definitely helps.
And you are in a leadership position in public health education. Have you seen this pushback against public health affecting the current generation of people training for public health? Are you how are you counseling folks, current trainees, about burnout? I mean, I've also seen there's been a lot of turnover in public health and frankly, medicine in general. But how are you talking about careers in public health now as a result of the pandemic? How are you addressing burnout, or at least trying to get ahead of it as you talk to students?
I think we're thinking about our education components, and they have to change as the world changes. So, you know, if you go in and you get a Master of Public Health degree, and you have all the traditional core areas, biostatistics and epidemiology and environmental health and healthcare policy and management and social and behavioral factors that impact public health. So those core areas, but there's a lot of cross-cutting areas. And to me, that's what resonated during the pandemic. The communication is a key one. And the things that we just talked about, I think that systems thinking, what does that mean? That means that how do you, when you're developing something, think about how you can expand it for more people. But it's thinking about how you think across disciplines, as an example, diversity, equity, inclusion, and health equity as really our North Star. I think that that resonated so much with me and so many people I work with, particularly during the pandemic. And our commitment is even stronger than ever. And it's always been there in public health. I think we have the opportunity to make things change right now. I think in public health education, and a number of us are talking about this, how do you communicate? And I think you have to practice, you know, give students scenarios. We know that a small proportion of what we discover in science ultimately gets put into practice. Lots of reasons for that. Really hard to do. But one of the ways to help move that along is to be able to talk about it in language that's understandable. And this is complicated stuff sometimes, right? And talk about it and be willing to have conversations about that, practice, those kinds of things. The other thing is that some of what we do, both in healthcare and public health, just isn't popular because it's what you should do or what you shouldn't do. And the habits and behaviors we talked about, not using tobacco or not using e-cigarettes and nicotine, particularly for adolescents. We talk about what we should eat, what we shouldn't eat, how much we need to be active. Sometimes it's just not what people want to hear. And so maybe new ways to talk about it, new and creative ways, but that whole communication piece, I think, is an ongoing challenge. And then sort of when someone is directly arguing, you know, what do you do with that? And how do you continue to have a conversation so that whatever message you were trying to bring to the table is still there at the end? Those are skills that we all have to practice and all of us have to be able to do. The other area I would mention is, I'm going to say it, politics. And what I mean by that is not partisan politics. What I mean is the environment in which public health, particularly government public health, is practiced. And that is, we're part of currently government agencies. And how are they funded? They're funded with public money and all this. So we need to be conscious. And we also, if we work with elected officials, we can't be afraid to talk to them. They may not agree, but we still have to learn those skills and being comfortable that it's not just someone else's environment, that's the environment of public health. So I would say that those are a couple of the big areas I think about a lot.
Yeah, I think those are all very wise words, Dr. Carney. And, you know, one thing I learned during the pandemic, and certainly this was an area of growth for me, is to learn to advocate for public health. And what I mean for that at the intersection of politics, right, is, you know, at the end of the day, at least in our state, similar to many states, is the governor has the final word. And as a representative of public health, of medicine, you know, my view on certain things is going to be, through that lens, right? Through public health, whether it be, you know, masking or vaccination or recommendations for mandates, stay-at-home orders, especially early on in 2020. But at the end of the day, you know, the reason why we elect folks like the governor is to make these tough calls and also to balance the decisions across public health and across commerce and the economy, right? And that's one thing, especially for me, as the pandemic progressed, you know, it's easy to say, you know, the best approach, right, to control the spread of COVID would be to shut everything down, right? Everyone stays at home. But that's not realistic long term, especially as you think about things like commerce, like the economy. And frankly, keeping people at home all the time in isolation starts to affect mental health, which is another huge public health priority in general. So I think for me, it was learning to advocate for public health, but also being comfortable with decisions that were made with people that had, frankly, broader perspective across different sectors to make those final calls, and frankly, compromising a bit and listening to each other and understanding, you know, what the concerns of, you know, of different businesses were, and hopefully them understanding what the concerns from public health, and coming to that compromise solution where it would minimize impacts on business while also working to achieve the goals of public health. And sometimes that's a little bit of a difficult line to balance, and certainly with all these competing concerns.
Yeah, public health in the real world is the most challenging, right?
Messy at times.
Really, really.
Well, Dr. Carney, our time is winding down here. Any final thoughts for our listeners? And I guess any utmost public health priorities as we look to the future of public health? What should we be focusing on post-pandemic here, post-COVID? What are the top sort of public health concerns that we should be addressing?
In my view, public health has never been more important. And there's so many different aspects of everything from access to healthcare with how we live and all those social factors that determine our health. And my message is get involved. And if you're interested in public health, take a course, try and learn more about it, and then see how you can get involved in your own community and in your own work.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Dr. Carney. Words to live by. Public health has never been more important. Get involved. I certainly couldn't agree more. So thank you again, Dr. Carney, for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your expertise and insights.
Thank you.
In closing, I also want to thank Erica Collins, our executive producer, and Carol Stone, our technical director. Thank you again, Dr. Carney. And I'm Dr. Philip Chan, signing off on behalf of the Rhode Island Department of Health. Thank you all and be well.